With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It would be a waltz, but eh?
On goes full. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. We all carry different stresses, big and small. It could be from work, stuff going on at home, or just from supporting a football team you flatter to deceive, and as the bedsheets have always said, let us down. We often bottle up these stresses and try and keep a lid on them, but when you do that, it can start to affect you negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It gives you a place to get these things off your chest, get down to root cause, and figure out how to work through what's weighing you down. Therapy is there to help develop positive coping skills. It's not just for people who have experienced major trauma. It's about empowering you to be the best version of yourself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not look and give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible and suited to your schedule. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners can get 10% off their first month using the code betterhelp.com/wanderers. That's betterhelp.com/wanderers. Let's get back to the show. Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. It's Richard Hobbs here, and joining me to talk about the less than thrilling 1-0 win against Sheffield United, I've got Stu, Tom and Jeffo. Fellas, we're 8th in the bloody league. Can you believe it?
Bonjour, Allah. Get ready. Get the passports fucking ready.
Amazing, eh? Can't believe it. What a time to be alive.
I mean, I know none particularly cares. I was going to say about today's game. We should care because we won. It's put us in a good league position. No one massively cares about the Carabao Cup. But that Liverpool win, Stuart's got me dreaming. It's got me dreaming of going to Tallinn. It's got me dreaming of going to Riga. It's got me, I'm going to run out of Eastern European capital cities in a second. So just stop, let's stop at two.
It's one of the very, very few times where you wanted Liverpool to win this afternoon. And I mean, the way that Chelsea just crumbled again was quite hilarious. But yeah, it's opened it up. And the fact that eighth could be on the cards anyway is quite insane as it is. But I think the mood of everyone after the game was like we'd lost the game anyway. Like we were saying beforehand, and I was in the old George Wallace having a few beverages to kind of almost drain our sorrows because it was so awful in the second half. But it's almost like a haze that it's actually happening. But it is happening, people, believe.
Like it does almost feel like momentum is just gaining traction for Wolves, isn't it? It almost feels like almost just that thing about momentum in football where there's nothing you can do about it. But Wolves are going. But before we talk about any of the fun stuff, should we talk about the game? I mean, we've got to. I mean, look, let's skip starting lineup stuff because it was unchanged. I think more notably was, I guess, about sort of Sheffield United. I think that's kind of a more intriguing prospect. Kind of going into obviously there about Archer, who I think we're all singing the praise of in preview show. But to say this was one for the purists.
Sadists.
But purists and sadists.
for Wolves Fancast story. Anyway, look, we're getting distracted. Let's talk about football. But yeah, first half, at least it was better than the second half. And it was, but yeah, apart from the goal, let's get into it. So, Tom, how did you sort of think Wolves fared in the first half?
Very average, middling sort of thing. There wasn't much to shout home about, but I suppose, like you said, when you compare it to the second, it was actually quite good. Interesting what he did to try and change the dynamic of when teams sit in. He almost had Lamina in a bit of a 10 role, so he was almost playing alongside Hwang when we had the ball. And then he seemed to sort of almost like invert the fullbacks as well. So, I mean, Aitnori was using, you know, right wing on various occasions, and they basically put the, it seemed like they put the wing backs very narrow. It was almost like to try and overload the middle just to try and create something to break them down. But I think Sheffield United were told they weren't allowed to attack first half, so I think that sort of nullified sort of any sort of threat they had. Although they did have a couple of breaks on the counter, which were a little bit worrying, and it wasn't it for a few last-ditch tackles, we could have been 1-0 down. So we did all right to come out of the half 1-0 up, I suppose, is how you'd summarise it.
Yeah, I mean, I had it in my notes that there was a lot of... I feel quite bad because I guess it's sort of what we do to teams in a way, in terms of, you know, try and catch them on the break and a ball over the top sort of set us free. And Stu, I can feel you saying the words agenda, but the Craig Dawson on the half turn wasn't exactly the quickest. But yeah, I mean, they never kind of quite looked threatening with those one-on-ones, so. So was it McAtee had one? But they never kind of quite looked like they were going to pose us serious danger despite having a couple of openings in that first half.
Because they're shit, that's why. if it was a better team, we would have been about 3-0 down again at half time. Because you look at the chances that they had, and they weren't bad chances. I mean, we've talked about Brewster in the past of what daylight robbery Liverpool got away with selling him for that amount of money for. Because it's baffling. It's baffling how much they paid for him. But again, as I said about Craig Dawson, you can't leave Craig Dawson one-on-one on the halfway line. It doesn't make any sense. And we did it again. And we got done by that before, earlier on in the season. But like Tom said, though, you look at it, and it was almost total control other than the odd cock-up, which a better team would have battered us for. But we weren't playing a better team, so it didn't matter.
No, I mean, it did almost just feel like after the last kind of couple of games where we, you know, obviously we had the Brentford defeat, but that was kind of sandwiched in between the Chelsea game and the Spurs game, and I know it felt like a bit of a reality check for me in terms of kind of how we were looking to kind of break down opposition. One player did stand out to me. I thought Hwang did very well in terms of sort of trying to pressurise them, because it is difficult against a team who, okay, we're 6 minutes in, I think we've already called him crap four times. But, you know, they did dig deep and wanted to kind of, you know, set up their, you know, their two lines and make it as rigid as possible and make it difficult for Wolves. And that does make it quite a difficult proposition for any team, Defoe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go out and say they're crap. I mean, majority of the players ain't great. But in the defence, they ain't terrible. I mean, Ahmed Hodges is a good defender. He shouldn't be playing at Sheffield United. He should be playing at a level a lot higher than that. He should be mid-table Premier League side. But like you said, you look at how we went into it today. Hwang, I mean, he went down in the warmth, didn't he?
That was bizarre, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it's strange. Plus, he had the injury back in the Asian Cup as well. So he ain't looking 100%. So we're battling with our own demons at the moment. So it's difficult, but the thing is, we've got to look at it from a positive perspective. Is the fact that in days of old, we'd have lost against the side like that. No matter how crap they are, no matter how poor performing they've been for the rest of the season, we'd have lost against sides like that. And it's the professionalism that is being put onto the training pitch and to being put into the players by Sean Derry and by Gary O'Neill. And the way that they're drilling them to do things that are slightly different. And like Tom says, is that they're looking at every game differently, and they're coming up with these different ways of playing it, like bringing the fullback across where they brought Nuri into play, is that they want to try and specialise the team into individual matches, and they look at it on a week-by-week basis. Like Nuno used to say, game-by-game, but he didn't do it. He was always the same. But now we're saying game-by-game and actually doing it, and we're seeing the fruits of it and the fruits of our labour. We're having a fantastic foundation to work from, but then doing these little specifics during the week and just keeping topped up on what we want to do and what is our foundation, what is our formulation of playing football, which is nice and is positive to say, despite the way that the game went and the actual way that we played the 90 minutes. It shows progression, which is good.
Yeah, and I guess, there very much is a case for that, you know, a sign of a good team is winning when you're playing badly. And, you know, it sometimes isn't great for the fan to kind of go through it. And it did just sort of feel like we weren't just quite up the races. Do you think that has anything to do with Kuna not being available? Because obviously we did well without him last week against Spurs. And I sort of think we're obviously a poor side for not having him in the team, but I don't know how much he'd have influenced a greater upturn in performance.
I mean, you have to look at the. It's always horses, of course, with any sort of player. But it's with Cunha, he carries the ball well, and he doesn't turn possession over very well. And he breaks lines when he picks up the ball. He'll run 20, 30 yards, and he'll make something happen. When in this team at the moment, we've only really got Neto who can do that. And it's difficult because he can get quite easily nullified because he's quite slight. Whereas Cunha, he's not the biggest bloke in the world, but he's a lot of a physical, bigger physical presence, and he can sort of push the player off and to, you know, into basic terms, barge the player out of the way because he's a stronger player and he's able to hold the ball off. But having people like that in your team is important because you've got players like Huang, Sarabia, they're not as physically strong. You can win the ball back a lot quicker off them. And what you find is looking at today compared to like when Cunha was in the side, your turnovers are a lot higher and the ball's coming back at you a lot more. But that's where you've got to stay positive in what you want to do in the philosophy of the football. And our Stu doesn't like it so much, but playing it from the back is what we want to do. He's I know it frustrates the hell out of fans, but we've got to stay true to it because you have to trust the process of what you drill to do instead of potentially doing something that you're not drilled to do in sort of maybe hitting it long or clipping channels, because then the ball invariably is going to come back because the team isn't set up to do it that way and they're not drilled to do it that way and they're not coached to do it that way. So it's good to have variance, but if you're not set up and you're not built that way, then you're going to have problems.
There's a difference between playing it from the back and pissing about, which is
100%.
Like, you look at, I mean, my issue is, I mean, I've got no problem with keeping possession. I mean, there was the usual morons in the second half in front of me, or the get it forward brigade, every possible opportunity. And then when we did do that and lose a ball, they were on the backs for losing the ball. But you look at yesterday for Burnley's red card came from pissing about unnecessarily. That's the difference. I mean, there's pass it around and keep possession, fine. Don't do stupid things like that and get a player sent off and lose a game for it. That's the differential between the two.
Totally agree. And I think that's probably more merit to what we're doing and the way it's been done is the fact that we don't have moments like this very often, and we don't have moments like that very often when we're playing games, is because it's been done and coached the right way, and it's been coached over a long period of time. Whereas you're looking at teams like Burnley, like you mentioned, Vincent Kompany's got to keep throwing shit against the wall until something sticks, because they're basically relegated as a team, but he's got to now justify his job going into next season. Because that whoever owns that club ain't going to want it to be a yo-yo club. Whereas, okay, yeah, Vincent can get us back up because he's done the job before. But what's the next season after that going to be? So say, yeah, okay, we don't have moments like that, is because Gary O'Neill's doing such a good job in terms of the coaching and the guys behind the scenes. So, yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. I mean, that pissing about sort of comes from sides who are experimenting and doing things and turning things on the head game to game, which is a bit silly.
We did it second half. We're pissing around at the back second half. I mean, it was so slow and laboured. Like Dawson was like rolling it over his foot about four times before he played a pass. I mean, what's up? Literally, like, what are you doing? What's the point? And there's a matter of times when it would be played into to the midfield and there was someone on their arse straight away. And, you know, when they were picking a pass, it was the wrong one. So I think that, I mean, there is definitely that sort of work to do there. But I think when you lose, you know, we won't know if it would have been better with Kuna, but when you've got a player like that, it's a dual threat then, isn't it? Because, you know, you've got more than one player who can, you know, get the pitch beat a man. It, like the Brentford game, as soon as Kuna went off, Brentford just shut off Neto and that was it. Game plan done. Like, that was it. Whereas you can't do that when you've got two players like that because then you get, you know, you get overloads in other areas. So, yeah, maybe it might have been better. But I think, well, obviously, fundamentally, we do have an issue with teams playing a low block. It seems to me that we're just, this isn't a team that can play at a low tempo. It's a high tempo team or nothing. Whenever we seem to slow it down, we don't seem to have the skills or the nous almost to fashion chances on a consistent basis. Yes, we made one or two chances first half, but I can't remember anything in the second half at all. Against a team that bad, what was disappointing. But, you know, when it's a high-pressure, high-tempo game, I think we can mix it with the best of them.
It's almost like they overthink as well. When they've got time to do things because they're not being pressed or they're not being bothered with anything, it's like they have to try and do ridiculous things. Like you said, in the second half, when they're trying to do little tricks and flicks on the edge of the 18-yard box, and you think, well, why? What are you doing this for? This is obviously not going to go well for anyone. And it is almost like that thing of, they're not quite, well, we know that they're not good enough, otherwise they wouldn't be here, would they? It's been a problem for years and years, and the fact that it still happens, apart from today, when we've actually got a result playing this way, which took a moment of genius, the one bit of good play in the whole game.
Should we talk about the goal? Because it was sunshine on otherwise a cloudy day, despite the weather actually being all right. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked again. I don't think I've ever seen Sarabia ahead. I can't remember like fuck it. I can't remember last time I saw Wolves score a header that good.
Especially by like someone who's 5 foot.
Yeah, you wouldn't put him down for someone who's like an accurate header of the ball. But I think you genuinely need to like take a moment to appreciate. That is a really good header he scored. You don't get him enough, do you?
No. I mean, we don't get balls in the box very often, let alone anything else. I mean, you look at him on his own against Spurs at home, doing his wizardry for the first goal. We don't get that very often. And when you think, okay, well, we've got all this pace out wide, and then it comes to our ball in the box, it'll go to the keeper, which 99% of the time it does do. Other than corners, which Gully corrected us about our conversation about that last week, which again, corners were back to being what we think they are today. But the ball in was sublime and on his right foot as well.
Who's all that? It's all that cutting inside he's doing and basically playing as a right winger. But it's one of those where about 2 seconds before the ball comes in, they're all actually, you know, the Sheffield United players all kind of lined up man for man, and then just the left back just goes absolutely AWOL and just doesn't bother tracking him. As soon as he gets anywhere near the box, and you see Sarabia point where he needs it, and you're right, it's a fantastic ball. And I think we've seen like a couple of times, even under Lopetegui, where they maybe try that sort of ball to the far post, and it would usually kind of happen for Wolves under the, you know, the second ball and stuff like that. But it was so nice when we see it, you know, it'd be perfectly executed for a change, and it not just kind of, I guess, goes to Sarabia, who holds it up, and maybe, you know, João Gomes or whoever, because you've got Lamina's pushed forward into the box as well. Like, you know, we had players getting in the box to commit to that ball, and you know, despite the defence, it managed to find its way through.
just men in the box. It's just percentages, isn't it? I've mentioned this every time. Like, we're actually getting men in the box now, and surprise, surprise, we're scoring more goals. I think I read that we've scored, was that our 40th goal? And by this point last season, we scored 19.
Yeah.
I think
it's the fastest amount of time it's taken us to score 40 goals in a top flight since the early 70s.
Yeah. It's amazing. When you get people in the box, you actually score goals. It's weird, isn't it?
Mm.
But it was just, it had to take a moment of bit of sort of bizarre play. You know, got an Ait Nouri putting in a right-footed cross, and then the smallest player on the pitch just nodding it in at the back stick. It was just a bit surreal, really. I mean, I'm not complaining at all. But then we had other opportunities, you know, in and around the box where you just wanted to pull the trigger, and they were just faffing around with it a little bit. But it was just that again. I think, like Stu said earlier, sometimes when they work on instinct like that, you know, a nice early cross, you know, and then just an instinctive header rather than having time with the ball at their feet to think about what they've got to do. It seems to count in our favour more often than not.
Yeah, and I think, you know, circling Ait Nouri in particular, he has taken that developmental leap this season that I think he definitely stalled on last year. But it was kind of nice to see him have like a goal contribution, because I sort of think we know him as this kind of left wing back who can get up and down the pitch, he can beat three men, but he doesn't necessarily always have that output in terms of, you know, being able to assist and stuff like that. And it was nice to sort of see him have a almost do a job of a left winger and actually knock a ball in, you say, nice and early. Yeah, it was with his weaker foot, but he put it in, you know, the perfect area to, you know, really ask questions. And when you have got a player who's, yeah, he gets criticised, particularly by me, but actually a very intelligent player in Sarabia, he's going to be able to identify the space against a team who are a bit woeful.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you look at Ait Nouri, you say he stepped up, and that's true. He has stepped up from last season. And you've got somebody we'll talk about a little bit later in Hugo Bueno. He pushed him last season, and it's exactly what Ryan needed, because Ryan needed someone who could be at the same level as him to, you know, challenge the team sheet. Whether the previous manager liked Ryan Ait Nouri or not, it doesn't matter. He was challenging him in terms of performances last year, and that's on a personal level down to it was going to make him work harder on the training ground. It's going to make him want to improve as a footballer, because he's going to want to play football. And the development that we've seen in him, he's pushing now. He's at the same level as most top six fullbacks in the league.
Mm.
And the same could probably be said about Semedo as well. Both of them look like they should be playing at a level higher. And it's one that they've been pushed by the players that are around them. Maybe not so much by Semedo, because Doherty, you know, he's brought in just as backup. But it says a lot about, and I love talking about Gary O'Neill's coaching and what he's doing, because I've mentioned it, I think it's a fourth time I mentioned it now. But it's like, it says about how good the coaching is being done, because it speaks levels that the players who are in the club, the younger players, are developing and they're improving.
Mm.
And it's not, we're not talking over 6 months and 12 months, we're talking game to game, players are improving. And the little things and the little areas that they're doing, maybe last week, the week before, they ain't in this game, and they're developing, they're coming forward and they're becoming a better player. But it says a lot about what the club are doing off the field as well with them, to make them a much better rounded individuals, as well as better footballers as well. And it's this, it's the club feels a happier, nicer place, and somewhere where we can be proud of what we're doing, especially young players. The golden egg now is we need someone like Nathan Frazier to take that and run with it.
Yeah,
we need a youth player to come through and to cement a place in this side. Kilman's kind of that with a captaincy, but you know, obviously we brought him in when he was slightly older. But he's somebody who has developed for a long period over the club.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I guess it's people like Toti Gomez, who obviously signed the contract a couple of weeks ago, and it's that like development where he's gone from being okay and almost under the radar to being able to play 20 odd games in a row and just look like a mainstay. And, you know, it'd be great if that next generation or whatever, you know, era of academy players, one of them can kind of take the ball by the horns. I mean, downside is you actually need to play them, which is the frustrating thing about Fraser, because he should have had that loan move to hopefully kind of kickstart him. And we've had a couple of really good comments on YouTube regarding Eight Nori. Big thanks as always for people who are commenting. Ed Marshall, fancast favourite. Biggest change in Eight Nori is he lasts 80 plus minutes now. And that's the big thing for me, is he's durable. And I don't know whether that's a age thing or just he's worked on it or what, but the fact that he's just a bit more reliable. Like, I remember, Stu, you said, like, back in maybe at the start of this month now, Christ, we played a lot of games, but, you know, can he play three games in a week? And he can now. Like, the stats have shown it. He can churn them out. And, you know, it's the sign of really good players. They stay on the pitch. Like, they play game after game. It's stupid, but it just the amount he brings us on a game to game, and it doesn't look like he's flagging. He's not pulling up with cramp after 75 minutes anymore.
Well, he could barely last a game a month, let alone play three in a week. I mean, it's just like what Jafar just said. Then it's not even like the standout ones. It's like our best players are better than they were last year under Gary O'Neill since August, and it's insane. Just think what he could do with an actual pre-season. It's, you know what I mean? It's that Bournemouth decision is one of the most stupid things that has ever happened in football. And look at them. Them wankers, they won a game all year yet. And yeah, I mean, Man City made hard work of it yesterday against them. But it's Man City getting the job done. We have actually got the job done today. Yeah, it won pretty and no one really cares. But the players were fit. And no one looked knackered at the end, which is a massive change. Let alone Eight Nori. You look at the age of some, especially like Dawson. He wasn't flagging at the end. He was as knackered as he was when he started the game. It was just everyone is fitter, everyone is better than they were, and that's all down to coaching.
Can we talk about the most important thing that happened in the game yesterday? In the game today?
I know what you're going to say.
No one filmed it, did they?
No.
Someone with an Astro Effect.
Somebody's family's done that. Got sure.
Just, no, I was going to say
the Astro Pay thing got a bigger cheer than the goal.
Yeah, that was the best thing that happened all
day. Honestly, just it comes to something where the halftime entertainment will be genuinely. I will remember that more than aspects of this game, which is a bit.
I mean, Wolves smashing their Sheffield United disability team 7-0 as well. Even they are bad. I mean, it's half time was better than the entire game. Just was.
Yeah. Can we talk about the Sheffield United players scrapping with each other? Quite literally. Like, I know it's a Sunday League one, isn't it? Oh, they're fighting amongst themselves, but they legitimately were. Just having it out. So in the last calendar month, we have got fans fighting each other because of Wolves and players fighting each other because of Wolves now. All we've got left is, and I don't quite know, is we need like executives / directors fighting amongst themselves next.
I would have liked it if it was managers and coaches, like if Roy Hodgson was still at Palace, him and his that. Him and Ray Lewington just offering each other out, just shirts off, their wrinkly old bodies just going through.
I tell you what, it would be a good scrap. To be honest, either of them getting punched. We've got Newcastle next weekend.
Oh, Tyndall. Oh, just, I'd pay good money to watch him getting smacked in the first.
Yeah, but I'd also pay good money to Eddie Howe get punched as well, because that's the issue. Is you got to think of the opposition here, Tom, and I can't see Eddie Howe throwing a good punch.
No,
but if he just connects once with Tyndall, I'd be happy.
Yeah, Eddie Howe. Did you see the that footy? I can't remember which two pathetic teams it was. It was one of them EFL accounts where there was two groups of fans going at each other at a train station, and it was so pathetic.
It was Doncaster versus Wimbledon.
Yeah, it was like that. That's how you can imagine Eddie Howe fighting.
Yeah, But anyway, Sheffield United players, it just, I mean, it's just
that is a red card. It's a red card. It doesn't matter that they're on the same team. It's hand in face. It's a red card. Rules are rules.
I did kind of wonder, and obviously, you know, the fact it went to VAR is just objectively funny. Stu, me and you both listened to a football ramble. If that didn't happen, this game would just not get talked about. Yeah. There is like this shouldn't be a barometer for football, but the fact that a match featured a VAR check to make sure to see if two teammates had committed violent conduct against each other is the sort of thing that will legitimately get picked up on at media outlets. Otherwise, this game is just dead in the water.
It's the fact that it's so baffling. There was nothing on the screen because it just says checking violent conduct, and normally it says who for, but it just said checking violent conduct. You know what's happened? So yet again, it took my Bolton mate watching it on Sky to text me saying, "Yeah, it's because they were fighting each other."
It just sums them up as a side at the moment. They just are so discombobulated. And in the preview show, we were talking about it, and you know, just Chris Wilder's come back and just bought genuinely fuck all in terms of quality of coaching, in terms of getting them up for it. I almost feel a bit sorry for them. To be honest, and you know, just seeing something like that, it's just embarrassing. We saw it with Johnson and Hennessy a decade plus ago, and I feel like if you look back on that from the outside looking in, you go, that is just so. It just antipathizes what I guess a toxic culture was at Molineux around that point. And I'm assuming like Sheffield United are kind of going through something similar, would be my guess.
We're getting panned every week. It's got to affect you, hasn't it? I think. Yeah. I was looking at their fans weren't happy with them during the game. I mean, they were pissing around at the back. I mean, they were as bad as we were playing out from the back, and they were getting pelters from their fans. So I think it's got to affect you mentally, hasn't it? If you're just getting whacked, you know, by every team you're coming up against, you're getting nothing coming the other way. Probably got a manager who's probably not inspiring much confidence. You've got players coming on alone from other clubs trying to take out people's knees. what chance have you got, really? It's just a joke.
I mean, it sums it up that I had in the whole big club, little club playfulness that's been going on this week, and the fact that Sheffield United, who always travel well, couldn't even be asked to sell out 2,600 seats, which it's a bad away, and there've been plenty of times, but that's not the point, is it? It's a Premier League away game when they ain't going to have money more for at least another 2 years, and they didn't sell out, and there was an entire block just missing, and they were still fighting amongst themselves. You think, bad news bears for them.
Yeah, and Sheffield United aren't exactly a team who travel badly. Like,
exactly.
I don't like, you know, don't like to use the term proper football club, but they are. They will bring fans, and you say, like, to not be able to do that at an elite level is bonkers. In reference to our debate about which coaches in the same dugout would you be interested in seeing a scrap, because genuinely we've had quite a number of comments. So Danny P, I pay good money for Ray Lewington versus Sean Derry. That'll be tasty. Ed, Dyche versus Wone. Yeah. And very good question here. Chris Rogers, who beats Matt Hobbs in a fight?
I think Matt Bradley answered that one in the comments as well. Anyone that can run up a hill.
He definitely battered Dan Ashworth. That's all I'm gonna say. But look, the second half wise, not exactly much want to write home about, is there? I think it almost just put it to one side. The only saving grace is I'm going to put that performance down to, particularly second half, is that we've got two big games coming up in the next week. And you know what? It didn't it still didn't quite feel that we're just seeing it out. And I don't know whether it's just because Wolves aren't quite at that level where we got our goal and we could just hold them at arm's length, or whether we're just a bit rubbish and got let off.
It felt a lot like that at times, especially like a point in the first half as well. As soon as we went 1-0, it was like, well, just remember, lads, we haven't got to run around that much. We are playing Sheffield United after all. And you have got two big games coming up this week. So absolute minimal effort at all times. But then it's like the whole thing of when you play for a draw, you're most likely going to lose because you're not putting the required amount of effort in. And that's what it seemed in the second half. And like Tom said earlier, the amount of nonsense that started happening is complacency. And we've had complacency settle in before, and we don't do well with it. But once you get to that level, it's hard to get out of it again. And I think the bottom just fell out so badly at the start of that second half that it was hard to get out of the rut. And we got lucky by them being so awful that they couldn't capitalize on it.
I completely agree. Kilman in the second half was unbelievably bad. I don't know if he completed a pass, but his first touch was always backwards as well. And I think he's usually the opposite to that, to be fair to him. You know, he's got his faults, but I think generally, by and large, he does try and drive up the pitch with the ball and look for a forward pass. But it just seems so negative.
Do you think that's why Gary O'Neill in that? Because there was an interview on Sky with him afterwards, and that I've seen since, that he's blaming himself for the second half performance. Yeah, maybe if that was an instruction to keep it as low as you can. And don't do anything, don't exert yourself. Maybe that's what the instruction was. Maybe that's why you're saying he got it wrong.
Quite possibly. Yeah. I think that's why Doyle was brought on as well, to give him an outlet, to give the centre-halves an outlet more in the middle. But that didn't really work either.
I think you're probably right there, Tom, because, I mean, circling back down to the Cunha thing, I mean, with him missing out, as a player, when he's playing in that sort of nine, inverted commas, that he would come into by the centre-half, pick up the ball and do something and carry the ball and just... So there's a little bit of variance in the play. But in the team where we've got Chani up front, he ain't going to do that. So half of the way that we've been playing has kind of been blocked off. Mm. And against a team who you say who's going to do a low block, it's difficult to break through and to break through the thirds and the lines doing it against a side like that. So he's trying something different, and like I say, it probably is his instruction. If he has said that probably is the case. But it's like, how do you adapt? And it's good that we faced a challenge like that against a side like this, so that, you know, that they struggle to punish us. So that we, when we do go into other games where, you know, against the likes of football terrorists like Brentford and Everton as well with Deutsch, that, you know, we're able to...
Stu's face.
Sorry, Stu.
Good point yesterday for the boys.
That we were able to adapt and overcome.
He was furious yesterday, wasn't he? He was so mad. You can see his angry veins starting, and he hasn't really got one of them. The pure lord that he is. But he was angry inside yesterday. But again, doing good work for us, keeping Brighton at bay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Should we just forget about that game?
just 3 points.
If we got the 3 points, we can move on. Like, you know, I think we're all happy to. Before we talk about Brighton, I've got just a quick announcement for you guys. Is that the Wolves Fancast have teamed up with Kitbag. They've got a massive range at the moment of Wolves merch on there, from replica kits to training gear, wall art, and even really nice retro tops as well. You can also get international overseas tops as well. You can get domestic ones as well, but I mean, why would you, if we're being honest? So if you want to make the most of their offers at the moment, you can do it via Fancast. So you go to the link that's on the screen. I'll put it in the description as well, guys. But it's kitbag.evy.net/fancast. It's kitbag, all one word, .evyy.net/fancast. So I'll put the link in the description. They've got free UK delivery on purchase at the moment. You can use the promo code winner as well. So go check that out. Right, Brighton, FA Cup, Stu. How where are we on the up for the cup ometer at the moment?
I mean,
we've got to be nearly there, right?
Yeah, I mean, talking about, let's not do Bluey jokes again. It's Brighton, which is annoying. So, but again, like Russ has been saying on Twitter for the entire of this season, they're not what they used to be.
No.
And you look at them and they'll Big D doing God's work against them and getting a draw at the Amex, which we managed. So that there's that one monkey off our back. We've got over the whole blue and white stripy curse and beating Albion without getting out of first gear. We've beat a shit team in Sheffield United, which we never do. So it's one more thing to do now. And I don't see if we got out of today with no injuries and you play that same team again against Brighton at home, I'm confident that we can do it in 90 minutes as well. No nonsense and staying there till 10 o'clock at night. Let's just get it done in 90 minutes. And the fact that we didn't concede a goal today was a miracle, because we always concede. I think 2-1 is more than a kind of acceptable bet, because they're not what they used to be. They're not what they used to be. And we've got a bit of a run together, finally. And we've got our act together. We know how to play Brighton now, he says. So I'm strangely confident, as much as a game against them not can be.
Tom, how are you feeling about it?
Yeah, nervously optimistic. I think it's time for Semedo to get over his Matoma curse. I think this might be the game.
He's not there, apparently.
Is he not there?
Yeah.
Holgate does us a favour, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Danny Pete's put on. Oh, that's brilliant then. That's great. So, yeah, because he's ripped us to shreds more than three or four occasions, to be honest. I think, you know, you might count in our favour, you know, that it is a team like Brighton who are going to attack us, because, like I said before, the tempo's going to be up. I think if we had a team that's just going to sit back, I'd be more concerned. If we can go toe-to-toe with them at a high tempo, why not? And we've got the players to do it now. They're in great form. Brighton might have other priorities. It's a shame that it's come at this point before, you know, that their run of game starts, I think, from now, pretty much, I think. Then it's like, I think they're playing pretty much every weekend then in the week. So it'd be nice if it was a couple of weeks later. However, they still might have their eye on other things. And like Stu said, yeah, I don't think that they're not the team that they were. With Gilmore being sent off, is he suspended for this, or is it only league games? Is he suspended for this one, is it?
It's a straight red card, wasn't it? So, yeah. He's suspended. Yeah. Same as the Joe Gomez thing.
Of course, yeah. So again, yeah, because I mean, he's not a great player, but he seems to play quite well against us, annoyingly. So that's another sort of feather in the cap for us. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm quietly optimistic, and Defoe is Danny P, who seems to be our fountain of all knowledge and all things Brighton, before I can pull up anything. You know, they start, they play us this week, but then midweek games against Rome next week. I love the Wolves mirroring, personally, but that's me being an absolute nerd, isn't it? But yeah, there's a likelihood Defoe they might have their eyes on other fronts as well, especially as their league campaign's a bit has the potential to dwindle, shall we say.
Yeah, it all depends on what De Zerbi wants and what he sees as a success this season. But that's all down to him and what the club have laid out. But you look at it from the outside, you're going to say they're going to do all. They want to do what West Ham did and go as far into that competition as possible, potentially even win it. Because the squad that they have and the setup that they have and the manager that they have, they could win that competition. It's not unfair to say, even with a fall-off in performance this season. But you look at how we line up compared to how they line up. The fact that we've got so many key players sort of missing in terms of a few of the starters, that we kind of won't rotate too much. And you do see Brighton probably rotating four, maybe five out. So it's only going to help us instead. And I mean, what we want for a success in the season is to be able to build on what we've done in previous years, but also to try and look at how do we bring in extra revenue next season. And that's the key thing, is how we bring in money into the club. And qualifying for Europe is going to be huge to us. It's the difference between how us bringing in maybe one player in the summer, one key player, and maybe two or three. If we get a European campaign. And that's the thing, is the club now are going to prioritise not only league position, but going as far into the FA Cup as possible. Because, I mean, if we get past this and we're in the quarterfinals, if I'm not wrong, I mean, you won game off Wembley again. And then when you get to Wembley, it's anyone's game. I mean, we saw that last time we were there. Granted, we were against a side who were a similar size to us in Watford at the time. But you know, you go toe-to-toe with anyone in this league, especially top six, and that's the sort of games that we want to be playing and we want to be involved in, and that's where we want the club to go, is we want them to go further in competitions and progress, and want them to be something so we can be proud of what the club's doing. And that's kind of where the progression seems to be, and it's nice. It's something that we can all as fans start to enjoy again.
Definitely. I think your point firstly on what European football means to this club, and I think, yeah, it will help a recruitment drive, but also help a retention drive as well. And we've had YouTube comments today in terms of, you know, oh, if and when Neto goes, and it feels there's a somewhat inevitability for balancing the books as much as anything else. But we're more likely to keep someone like Neto if we've got European football, or, you know, even someone like João Gomes, let's say, where he's not being touted around lots, but actually it's just something extra to kind of keep these players incentivized that they are playing, you know, beyond just the 38 Premier League games. And, you know, building on that, I guess you're right. Football's about creating those memories and those moments, and that's kind of what the cup's all about. Like, Wolves are probably going to, you know, we're going to finish between 7th and 11th. Most likely, it's going to be between 9th and 11th, realistically. I think the season will end up kind of getting forgotten about in the near future if we... Not because it's been a bad season and we've done really well, but I just don't... I think having a cup run or getting to a semi-final again will really kind of give that extra almost icing on the cake, I guess, to really remember what this season's been all about and have something to kind of really, you know, view the season under a microscope.
Yeah, you want a showpiece event. You want to see Gary O'Neill in a suit rather than a Castor hoodie.
He's not going to wear one at Wembley, is he?
He might wear a suit jacket over that hoodie. I mean, to be fair, that hoodie, it's the one thing that I've bought from the down the club shop that you can wear it for an entire week and not have to wash it. It's amazing. And it feels like it's all silky, but it feels like it's too cold, but it's actually really warm. And vice versa.
So hang on, it's actually there.
Can we
just
there,
roll then? It back? I'm sure the quality of it is fantastic. And if that, why does that mean you don't have to wash it for extended period of time?
No, because you know what I mean. With hoodies, I mean, you don't wear a hoodie once and put it in the wash, do you? That's mental behavior. You wear it for a couple of days and then you put it in. But you know where the fabric gets all stretched and stuff, and it's all like the wrist, like around your wrists. Depends how much you use your wrists. But you know what I mean, with like fluffy hoodies and stuff, where the fabric, like the cuffs, get all stretched. That one doesn't. It's like it's not pure. It's the best piece of material I've ever had. I don't know what it is. But yeah, so we need to see Gary O'Neill not wearing that at Wembley. Just to end it. And the fact that we've got 3 years now to win the FA Cup before we're off that graphic altogether. So we can't be having that, because then them lot will be on there and not us, which is not fair.
Yeah, we can't be having that. I mean, to be fair, you look at the teams who are left in it and the games that are this weekend. You've got Blackburn, Newcastle, Chelsea, Leeds, Bournemouth, Leicester, Liverpool, Southampton, Forest, Man United, Wolves versus Brighton, of course, and Coventry, Maidstone, George Ellacobi's Maidstone, and Luton, Man City. Some tasty games in there. But there is a chance of us getting a quite decent draw as well. If we do get past Brighton to potentially navigate away to the semi-finals potentially as well.
Well, we've played and beaten all these teams anyway at one point. So I don't really fear anyone on our day. It's just if anything conspires against us like it normally does do, that's the problem. But on our day, we can beat anyone.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. I think you try and avoid City and Liverpool, don't you? I think. But after that, there's no one else to fear, is there? But I mean, you know, you win this game and then you get the Coventry and Maidstone winner, then you know you're massively odds on, aren't you, for Wembley? So it's a big game Wednesday. I think it's a really big game.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Like you look at the teams who are left and how you can kind of navigate your way through. You're right. Like, without kind of sounding too pompous, like, I think whoever gets Coventry versus, you know, the winner of Coventry versus Maidstone is kind of guaranteed that semi-final berth. So that's like, you know, a 1 in 8 if you get through, or 1 in 7 that you're going to go through. Forest versus Man United. Again, I'd sort of fancy whoever Wolves have in that. Bournemouth, Leicester, again. So, and maybe even Blackburn versus Newcastle and Chelsea versus Leeds. So, you go through it. And apart from, you say, Liverpool and Man City, there really isn't a lot to fear, I think, in terms of that. And you never even know if, like, Liverpool, if you got them in a quarterfinal. Obviously, they've won the Carabao Cup. They're still progressing in Europe. They've got the league to think about. We know what we can do against them on a one-off game, particularly at Molineux.
Yeah, exactly. And you look at who we had to beat last time to get to the semi-final, and we did it. And you look at the celebrations at finally beating Man United. Yeah, it was 8 o'clock on a night game, and it was incredible. But still, we still did it, and comfortably in the end as well. So no one other than, but even Man City, we've literally shown this season that we can do it against them. So in a one-off game, which these are with no replays, I'd back us against anyone. You know, we have to turn up and we have to have them not bring to their full potential, but everything's doable.
I mean, we have got Newcastle next weekend, which is becoming which will be quite a decisive game, and probably potentially season defining in terms of beating a team or playing against a team who are very much in contention with us for the same spots on the table. Do you think O'Neill's going to have one eye on that game at all? Because, I mean, obviously we've not changed the lineup in the last couple of games anyway. Do we see any changes being made against Brighton with Newcastle game in mind?
I was going to say one. I'd probably say Santiago Bueno. Just more minutes under his belt. Just because Dawson can't really be doing the quantity of games that we're looking at over the next few weeks, especially if we do get through as well. We've got to try and manage what the players that we've got, and somebody of his age, you might as well develop Bueno when you've got the game time too, especially if Brighton do rest some of their key players. So bringing in somebody like him, and then you look in Bellegarde as well, more minutes potentially, just slight rotations. He's all we really need at the moment, just to keep things ticking over and keep players fresh, so that if we do get injuries or we do need to change things around in games, players are ready to go and they've had minutes under their belt.
I guess so again, it's a really good problem to have, but you've even got like players like Tommy Doyle, who like is itching to get back on the pitch. It's only through form and availability that Gomez and Lamina are ahead of him, and I could see Doyle starting for the same logic, Jaffo, just to kind of get a bit of rotation, potentially get a foot on the ball a little bit more against a possession heavy Brighton side as well.
I think he played quite well against it. He played didn't he in the away game, and I remember him having a really good game.
Hmm.
Yeah, he was probably thought, man of the match.
Yeah, I thought the game was sort of screaming out for him today. To be fair, I just didn't want Lamina or Gomez to come off. I just didn't know how you integrated him into the game, because he's someone who is calm on the ball and very rarely, you know, plays a bad pass. So yeah, I could possibly see him coming in. I've got no arguments for Santi coming in either, to be fair, because he's looked, with every game that's gone, he's been a little bit better than the game before, and he's unlucky to be out of the team at the moment. So yeah, that'd be one. As long as Hugo Bueno's not playing.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, that was going to be my lovely little link in terms of our left wing berth. And we didn't chat about it earlier, but a slightly bizarre Instagram story, I think it was, that he posted after the game, which if you bear with me 2 seconds in terms of what he sort of posted on there, he posted a photo of himself saying, I will either find a way or make one, with a brain emoji, and find it worrying personally into when you get players like that. I know Sarabia had one earlier this season, didn't he?
Mm.
We got a bit mouthy on the old Insta.
But then he played him after, so it worked in any case. He hasn't. If he'd played and he'd been excellent, and then he'd been dropped, and you say he's unfortunate, then he'd get out of a case. But he's been awful this season when he's come on, and when he's deputised, he hasn't. Well, there's a reason Matt Doherty's played at left back instead of him, because he hasn't took his chances when it's come to him. He's if he was injured or if he's not fit properly, something's wrong with him. I don't know, but the fact that we give him a new deal and now he's moving off because he's not having minutes, well, it's Hoover behaviour, and no one wants that. You'd like to think he's got a bit of bit more about him than that, and you look at all the media stuff and the interview with Mikey Burrows with him a few months ago, and he seems like a down-to-earth kid. He's been here a long time. You think he knows better than to kind of stir things up a bit, and maybe it's like the lost in translation thing will be used afterwards, but it's not the thing you want to see, really. It's especially when the team as a whole is doing so well, you're one who's on the bench for a reason, and when you've been given a chance, you haven't taken it. You can't then be putting cryptic nonsense like this out. It's just a bit off, really, for me.
It's not even that. Didn't he kick off on the bench as well today? There was something that went round that he as soon as the third sub was made, you know, he just had a hizzy fit, which is just not on. The big difference between this one for me and the Sarabia one is that we weren't playing that well when Sarabia was at the team, and they were putting players like Doherty on ahead of Sarabia, you know. So, you know, he can't complain. Ignore he's, you know, one, like Jaffo said earlier, he's like an elite fullback now. He's like one of the best in the league. And you're not playing anywhere. You're not good enough, or you haven't been showing enough form to be in the team currently. So, and we're winning. So, what are you doing? It just does it. It's not a good look. And if he thinks that's going to get him in the team, he needs to give his head a wobble. Just like Stu said, just bizarre behaviour. If he's made a change today and he's brought on Dock at left back ahead of him, he might have a case. He might have a point. Yeah. But he took Aitnori off to put Doyle on to change the system. And then what was the other? He brought Bellegarde on. And then he brought Doc on instead of Sarabia on the right. So, like, it wasn't a change where he could have, you know, he was going to be playing anyway. Mm. So it was really strange that. And it does seem out of character because, yeah, I listened to that Mikey Burrows thing and it does seem pretty sound and down to earth. And he's still quite young. It's not like he's a season pro signed for big money from someone else and he's kicking off because he can't get a game. He broke into the team potentially earlier than he should have, and really it was only that Davies who gave him a chance. So I think there's a lesson to be learned there as a young player.
I think it's frustrating because he showed so much promise last season, and unlike Aitnori, he has pushed on, and arguably it's to the detriment of Hugo Bueno, because he's just not had those minutes. Great YouTube comment. Hugo's the only guy who's gotten worse this year. It's a him thing. And yeah, I get it. But it might be a case that actually it's been very clear, you know, first half of the season that Aiton Ori's O'Neill's guy. And, you know, he's not maybe got a loan move or anything like that. And he's been promised maybe more minutes and stuff like that. To then not get it, I can understand this frustration, but there's a right and a wrong way to go about it. And, you know, doing the passive aggressive social media posts, it's very, you know, Facebook mum, in my opinion. And the Instagram story is just the, you know, the Facebook mum equivalent, isn't it? Of posting something similar for me.
You're saying he's gone Karen? Is that what you're saying?
I am, basically. And he just wants someone to go, you're okay, hun. Message me. not gonna share on here. Too many snakes. You know, it is that equivalent.
This has happened to you, hasn't it?
Always.
You seem very clued up.
Yeah. I don't share. No. But do you know what I mean? It is just like, what's the best you think is going to happen from posting something like that? Because all it's going to do is either it's going to get people talking like us, and at best it's just a little bit naff, isn't it? At worst, he's kind of like just digging out his club / employer.
He's just kidding.
He's 21.
Just the first time.
Yeah.
It's one mistake he's made in how many years he's been here. It might not be a mistake. It might be something just silly. If it happens over weeks and weeks and weeks, and it says again, or it happens in training, and O'Neill spots something that ain't quite right, then yeah. But the club will have ways of dealing with it. O'Neill ain't going to get flustered by some 21-year-old posting shit on fucking Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, as things go, it's fairly light-hearted compared to, you know, it's not like...
Heads gone.
I was going to say heads gone. I was going to say Chandler in the NFL this season, going Instagram live, which was, I was going to say, bonkers. That's probably quite not the right term, because I think he did get, you know, borderline section. Anyway,
he knew what he was doing, but he didn't.
Yeah, he very much didn't. I think that was the worrisome part. But look, let's get back to the game. I mean, it is such a big opportunity for Wolves. Should we do quick score predictions before we wrap up?
Well, no, I said 2-1 earlier, so I'll stick with 2-1. 2-1 win. Yeah.
What about you, Jeffo?
I think 2-0.
I'll go with a 3-2 goal fest.
Oh.
Yeah, I love you, Tommy.
It's that going to have extra time as well. Because I think a 3-2 with a AET afterwards, it's like a
Brentford special. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Gets you out nice and late.
Yeah, I was going to say it's going
to. So that you're up at the crack of dawn. I listen to you
physically.
What time
was
that?
Yeah, Stu. When have you genuinely slept in the last 12 hours?
It was the fact that was the third podcast I'd done in 72 hours. For anyone who didn't listen to, go over on Soccer Neophytes podcast, or it's on my Twitter somewhere. Where the point is, the guy who chose the team last year on the whole format, Nate's explained it before, he chose Spurs, and Nate hadn't been able to watch the game, he just listened to it. So I wasn't having no nonsense of him going on there saying Spurs were good when we battered them in our special way where we beat Spurs every year. So I said to Nate, I said, okay, I'll come on then. And he was like, it'll be 8:30, so like 3:30 your time. Okay. So I just set my alarm for 3:20 and then got up, and I was just sitting there, and I just said to him, I said, well, just text me then when we're about time to turn up, and then I'll just click the Zoom link, and I appeared like a fun genie. But at that time it was 4:10 in the morning, and then I went to work.
You're mental.
But the mind boggles. Because was it last night you went and saw a Dune 2? Or was that
no. That's Friday when we're going to watch It was still, this is still live.
I will do the whole, you can follow us on Twitter in a minute. Just,
yeah, if anyone's in Birmingham on Friday, me and Gully are going to watch Football Cliches live. So I'm watching June 2 first and then going over there.
Perfect. And nothing sums you up more, Stu. I'm assuming Gully's not watching June 2 with you.
I don't think Gully's watched June part 1. We can ask him.
We will do.
Yeah, everyone else.
Take this one offline.
Everyone tweet Gully now and ask him if he's seen June part 1.
I'm going to guess. Actually, I don't know. You never know. Anyway, look, we're going to wrap it up today. Big thank you to everyone who's listened. We will be, of course, back after the Brighton game to talk about, obviously, the round of fixtures and hopefully Wolves progressing into the quarterfinals. Make sure you are following Wolves Fancast and all the usual places at Wolves Fancast. We're here, there, and everywhere. And, of course, make sure you check out the kit bag offers they've got on Wolves merch as well. Until next time, though, it's goodbye from Tom.
See you, guys.
It's goodbye from Jafo.
Au revoir.
It's goodbye from Stu.
Arrivederci.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.